You're listening to the best possible taste on West Limerick 102 FM. My next guest is a Cork-based mum of three gorgeous girls. It has taken her a number of years to discover her true calling, and she joins us now tonight to share her culinary journey. So let's hear more about it from Orla McAndrew.
Bon appetit.
Yummy.
Grubs up.
Delicious.
Orla, it's lovely to meet you and you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks so much for having me, Sharon.
I have come across you in the past on TV because you have the 6 o'clock show segment there and also online. And I think you have a really interesting food story that you're going to share with us this evening. So let's start with Orla as a young girl. And did you bake or cook with your grandmother or your mother? Tell me where it all began.
Well, that's actually exactly where it all began. My granny was a cook in Clonalla's house, and my granddad was the gardener. So it's a beautiful old country house up in Roscommon. So she was an amazing cook. And my mom, when we moved to London when I was 10, my mom basically put food on the table by baking apple pies. So I remember coming in from school at a very early age, peeling apples and being in competition with my siblings to see who could peel the most apples in the shortest amount of time. So we were having great crack. So cooking and baking is very much part of my DNA, I'd say.
And did you do home economics at school?
No, much to my very contentious. I was forced into technology instead. But look, I got there in the end.
And whenever you say you were in London, so did you go through the UK education system? Did you do GCSEs and A-levels as opposed to the Beacon Cert?
I did, yeah. We moved when I was 10 and I came back to Ireland when I was 20. So I had all my schooling in London.
And of course, for anybody that isn't familiar, the number of subjects that you can choose for A-level in particular, it's only three, or if you're really smart, you could do more than three and maybe do four. So, you know, home economics probably isn't one of the more popular choices, or it certainly wasn't for A-level whenever I was at school.
No, I was really into languages, actually. So I did French and Italian and geography. That was what came really naturally to me. And I always loved to cook. I was always in the kitchen and always absolutely obsessed with food. And actually, at the time I was doing my A-levels, my mom went into her second marriage and I was 18. And I actually catered that wedding. So that was my very first catering experience. But it was at home and it was just, you know, it was beautiful. There was about 65 people there and it didn't seem like a big deal. But when I look back now and think, God, you're only 18 and you knew exactly what to do for 65 people. So it was obviously, it was there in me, but I never considered it as a career at that stage.
Like, that's really impressive, cooking for 65 people at 18. There's plenty of people couldn't do it at 58, myself included. So gosh, well done. And like a really nice thing to do for your mum as well on a very special occasion. So tell me about the next step after you did your A-levels. Where did you go? Did you go to college and what did you study?
I did. So I've had a long and a varied career in college, but initially in London, I started off with international business and French because it sounded fancy, basically. But I quickly learned that I had absolutely no interest in business whatsoever. I loved languages. I did 2 years of that and I just struggled enormously with, you know, economics and all of that stuff that I had no interest in. So after 2 years, I was coming back to Ireland anyway because my whole family were moving back. So I basically dropped out of college that time. And I spent the next 5 years in Cork kind of establishing myself and getting to know people and working in bars and all the things you do in your early 20s. Until I got to 25 and I thought, oh my God, right, what am I going to do with my life now? Because time is kind of slipping away. And I remember that summer reading Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential. And I thought to myself, yep, that's the thing for me. So I enrolled in a culinary arts degree in Tralee and absolutely loved it, just loved it.
And you know, you would have been classified as a mature student then, even though, you know, given that I'm in my 50s, I just think it's really not the way to call a student whenever they're in their mid-20s. Like, you're still very young. But I do think whenever you get to a certain stage in your life and you do know exactly, yeah, this is what I want to do, that you give it your all and you're totally committed to it. So your age probably stood to you at that stage.
It did, in one way, in that I was totally committed, as you say, and I knew what I wanted. But on the other side, then I came out at 28 qualified. It was pretty much actually that first time that they ran the culinary arts degree. It was pretty much a business degree. We had very little time in the kitchen. So I came out at 28, technically a qualified chef. So wherever I went, people expected so much more from me than I was capable of giving. And it actually really knocked my confidence as a cook. So I've gone into kitchens and they were giving me tasks that somebody who'd been 10 years in the kitchen would find no bother. But I didn't know really what was going on. So I didn't actually last too long in any professional kitchen because I found it really overwhelming and I felt like an imposter and I really felt useless. So really and truly, I never had any training from anybody because I didn't last anywhere long enough. So I left that whole world within a year and a half and I said, no, this is not for me. I'm not cut out for this at all. And I decided to try my hand at a farmer's market stall because at least it was self-paced. I could go back to cooking what I like to cook. And I was getting to share my food with people and I had nobody, you know, breathing down my neck with mad expectations that I just didn't feel like I could fulfill. So it was a nice way of still being able to cook food and share food. But yeah, flying solo basically suited me a little bit better.
What markets did you go to and what were you selling?
So I was called, I named myself after my granny. So it was Lily Riley's Pantry and it was home baked sweet and savory tarts. And I was in Mahon Point for a while. I was in the Coal Quay in Cork and I was in the Middleton Market. My lack of business acumen shot me in the foot in the end, really, in that I was so enthusiastic about what I was, you know, bringing to the table each week. And I met customers and I, you know, we had great relationships and I thought, oh, that person would love this and that other person would love that. So I kept adding to the range of food that I was providing. So it ended up that I was 16 hours a day, 7 days a week preparing, you know, between preparing and being out on the stall, because the range was just enormous. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. And then some weeks, you know, you'd be washed out and you come home with all this perishable food and it's going to waste. And other weeks then, you're sold out within a half an hour, you know. So it was a huge steep learning curve of what not to do, basically.
And it sounds like you learned a lot from that and it probably prepared you for your next step in the journey.
It really did. Like, at the time I looked at it as a complete failure, and I was absolutely flat to the mat, exhausted, and I stepped away then and actually met my husband and we started a family fairly soon. And I was very, very happy just to be a stay-at-home mom and to come away from all that madness and just to concentrate on my first couple of little girls. And then when my eldest was 5, I was approaching 40. And I remember thinking, right, I always thought by the time I was 40, something would reveal itself. And that, you know, all in the meantime, I suppose I didn't mention this. In the meantime, I'd been to college a few times and I'd studied a specialty diploma in specialty food production. And I also did a postgrad in food marketing and I was always just interested. And I always felt that by the time I was 40, something would reveal itself that I could use all these different things that I did that weren't really related, only that it was all around food. And so 40 was approaching and nothing had revealed itself. So I was beginning to worry and I was beginning to wonder, what will I do for the rest of my life? You know, what will I do when I grow up? And around that time, then I was in the park with a friend of mine and we met a friend of hers, a girl I didn't know, who just said that she was getting married in 6 weeks' time and she couldn't find anyone to cater. And I really liked her. She was a really lovely girl. And I just said, you know what? I think I could do that for you. And she liked me too. And she said, okay. So 6 weeks later, I catered for 130 people. I had a band of friends and family and neighbors and you name it out to help me. And it was just an incredible success. It was really really beautiful wedding, and I really felt alive for the first time. Like I absolutely knew this is it for me. This is what I'm going to do. And this is me using every skill and talent I could ever imagine having.
What an amazing story, Orla.
I actually get emotional thinking about it now, because it was such an amazing opportunity. You know, like that girl is now one of my best friends in the world, because she literally handed it to me on a plate the rest of my life, you know. So yeah, it was an amazing opportunity.
I think a lot of people can relate to what you're saying in terms of, you know, we think we're going to wake up one day and we know exactly what to do to make the dream or the idea come true, that we don't even know what the dream or the idea is. And especially, I think a lot of women can relate to that. I can see so many parallels between your career and mine, because you were talking about university and doing international business with French, was it, did you say?
Yeah, that's right.
And I did business admin with French at Queen's. And my father used to say to me, well, what are you going to be? What will I tell people that you're going to be? And I would have said to him, well, that's the beauty of it, Dad. I can be anything, because I hadn't a clue. And like yourself, I thought I'd wake up one day and say, oh yeah, this is it. I have it all figured out now. And I know the direction in which I'm going. And there's so many people out there that are so driven and specific and goal orientated, and they know exactly what it is they want to achieve by a certain age, and they go after it proactively, that I would have been looking at them thinking, am I supposed to do that as well? Because I'm certainly not in that lane. I'm in the slow lane and they're in the overtaken lane. But fortunately for you and for myself, we are where we are now, and we're very happy where we are. So you catered your mother's wedding when you were only 18 for 65, and then this other wedding happened for over 100 people, and that set you on the path that you're on now and that you're very happy to be on. But along the way to where we are today, a couple of other things happened, and one of those is being on the 6 o'clock show.
Yes, that's right. I actually was on the Today Show as well before that. And I just think that in the last 6 years since that first wedding that I catered, the opportunities that have come my way have been so phenomenal. And I really, really put it down to the fact that I am exactly on the right path, that I'm in on this path with such gratitude for being on this path. Like, it means the world to me that I get to live a fulfilled life, and that I get to set an example for my girls as well. That used to play very heavily on my mind, you know, that I wanted them to know that I wasn't just a mummy, and that women are capable of so much, you know, and being a mummy is an amazing thing, and I love every bit of it, and it's just as important as everything else I do. But I wanted them to know they could reach for the stars and do whatever they wanted. So that's a major driving force for me. And because of that, I just suddenly came with this sense of, if this thing can be done, then I can also do it. So I have no limits on myself. And like some people, even in my own family, my mom is a little bit in awe, oh my God, you're on the telly. Whereas I just think, well, it's a thing that has to be done. There are people who cook on the telly, so why couldn't I do it? You know? So at the moment, on this road of absolutely limitless possibilities, and it is very, very welcome in my life, because up to the point where I started this business, I was full of limitations and full of self-doubt and full of imposter syndrome. And I had absolutely no idea what I was actually capable of. So, you know, getting to do what I do and using every single skill and talent in my being is just so welcome. And I'm so, so grateful to have that opportunity.
Am I right in saying that you put it out there that you wanted to be on the TV, that you put it up on your LinkedIn? Did I see that on social media?
The first thing I did was I started to admit to myself that that was a goal and a dream. And then I started saying it out loud just on Instagram Lives. And it felt very, very vulnerable and ridiculous. Like, I really felt like, who do you think you are? Get a grip. But the more you say these things and the more people you say it to, the more you start believing that it's a possibility, and the less vulnerable you feel in saying it, And it was actually, you know, I chased hard to get onto the Today Show. I sent email after email after email. And I was kept knocking on that door until I got a yes. And then it was after that, when I'd had that experience, that I was confident enough to put it up on social media that I was interested in more work like this, and that I was open to every opportunity. And a lot of people commented on how brave a move that was and how vulnerable. But at that stage, I suppose, when you're on the journey and you keep getting rewarded for being vocal and vulnerable and saying it like it is, and, you know, admitting that these are your dreams, and as I say, being rewarded for that, then it makes you braver all the time. It doesn't feel brave, it just feels like the natural next step.
And if you don't ask, you don't get. And sometimes when you say to somebody, look, I'm interested in X, Y, or Z, they do say back, oh, I look, I never even thought that would be something that you'd like to do, or I thought you might be too busy to do it. So there is great value in just saying, look, you know, this is one of my goals. And and especially when we have so many networks now, online and offline, there is great power in saying, look, you know, this is what I want, and can you help me, please?
I agree 100%. And exactly that, in terms of networks, like, I'm part of Network Ireland, which I found to be really phenomenal for that. Like, even for me to be able to share what I know with people, it's so lovely to be able to help people and to see people admitting, this is my goal, can you help me achieve it? I mean, sure, don't we all love that? We all love to be able to help each other out. So you're absolutely right. Yeah, networks are amazing.
And I think women are better now than they used to be at helping each other to rise up. But you have to ask and you have to be specific. Sometimes I find people can be a bit wishy-washy, and it's like, I don't understand what you want or what you're asking me for. So you have to be specific. Otherwise, you can't get the help that you want.
And you know what? That's even true of the universe. If you're not specific with the universe, because I actually think that that's who's giving me all these opportunities. It's not necessarily the networks. It's me being really clear to myself about what it is that I want. And all of a sudden it lands in my lap and I think there's a purity about the level of gratitude that I feel for where I am. And I'm kind of looking at this from a helicopter view. I often wonder, how are you so fortunate? How is everything that you want literally landing in your lap? And I think it's because it's with such clear intention. I want the best for everybody else beside me as well. Everything that comes my way, I'm so deeply grateful. And it's just it's just been such a positive trajectory since the moment I stepped into the thing that I was supposed to be doing. Everything just seems to be landing in my lap. And it's not that I don't work very, very hard at what I do. I absolutely do. Like, physically, mentally, emotionally, catering a wedding is huge, high risk. It takes a massive toll on me. And I don't, you know, I'm not sailing through life. It's very, very difficult what I do, but I do it with such gratitude. And it's so fulfilling that it has absolutely changed my entire life. Like, it's amazing.
And your approach to wedding catering now is a zero waste approach, which is quite unique.
Well, yes, this is something that I felt really passionately about, basically since the time that I was in the markets and coming home with all this perishable food. It was just abhorrent to me. Like, I can't stand, I think it's a very Irish thing as well. We just don't like to waste food. It's not good. So this concept of bringing zero waste to the market was 2 years in the making. So whether or not people opt for a zero waste wedding, I create very little waste for all my weddings because everything is planned to perfection. The quantities and amounts of everything I need are really well planned. But then aside from my kind of normal catering, I offer people the opportunity to have a completely zero waste, which what that actually means is on the week of their wedding, I go to all of my suppliers and gather whatever is in surplus. So my couple have no idea what's on the menu and neither do I. And it's like a massive game of Jenga. You know, stuff comes in from the Wednesday and the Thursday. I'm still deciding the menu on Friday morning and I'm serving it on Saturday. So it's really, really, really creative process, but we get to rescue upwards of like 225 kilos of perfectly good food that might otherwise end up wasted. So it's been a huge success. It's still only about 30% of what I actually do. But I think that's amazing considering it's only launched in the last year and a half. I think, you know, 30% uptake is amazing. And the goal would be that at least 50% in the next year or two, and eventually, hopefully, 100%.
I'm sure there's lots of couples out there, and especially as those younger generations come along getting married, because in this house, my children would be very focused on being sustainable and recycling and everything. So definitely that younger generation coming along, I think you're going to find more and more couples who are committed to sustainability, and they'll just love this idea of having a wedding with zero waste food attached to it. Can you give us some examples of a menu that you've done recently, just to so we can get an insight into the sort of dishes that you are serving up at a wedding?
I will, but just before that, just to counter your point there about the younger people, what I found actually, excuse me, it's actually the people who are on their second time round are far more open to the idea of the zero waste, which I found really funny and counterintuitive. I would have thought it would have been the younger people, and hopefully, obviously, in time, the younger people will come up as well. But the most interesting feedback that I've gotten from people who opt for zero waste is that it's one less thing for them to have to think about. So they don't have to plan the menu. They don't have to decide on the menu. They hand that over to me and they're happy that it's going to be amazing on the day. So I just thought that was really interesting bit of feedback that I'm getting. And the most recent zero waste menu. So I'm dealing with the suppliers I ordinarily deal with. So I've got beautiful Santola goat's cheese, and I'll usually put that into some kind of a pastry with whatever herbs have been made into, like a salsa or a pesto of some description. Canapés are always really interesting, and I kind of get carried away with canapés on a zero waste, because you've all this gorgeous stuff and you just, you know, you're putting it all together trying to make different little pops of color and flavor. I often get kind of different cuts of beef, like shoulder, tougher cuts of meat sometimes, and sometimes offal. So for starters recently, I had a beautiful kind of, it was heart and liver in a lovely kind of white wine reduction. And I think I tell people what they're eating on the day, and lots of people were a little bit dubious, but the flavors were amazing. So I converted people as well to eating offal who mightn't have had offal before. And I think one of the lovely things as well about the zero waste is everybody on the day is aware that this is happening. It's a kind of a focal point. There's a buzz about, oh, what are we going to eat? Where has it come from? Why would that have been thrown out? Isn't it perfectly good? So it's kind of getting people to think a little bit more who mightn't otherwise be conscious about food waste and the broken food system that we have. So it's a real, you know, talking point on the day.
You mentioned pops of colour with the canapés, and I know you have a real passion for culinary artistry, so that everything just looks amazing and is presented really carefully and in a very eye-catching way.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. Look, we all eat with our eyes, don't we? And I'm such a foodie, and I'm such a feeder as well. And like, when I cater an event, I feel like I'm giving myself to whoever's eating. You know, it's a real part of me that I want to share with people. So I'm never going to give less than 1,000,000%, because I'm letting myself down if I do. So I think that, you know, probably everyone who does what I do feels like that as well. But I feel like it's my unique selling point, in that I put my heart and soul into the food that I'm producing. So there's so much thought into how it looks, how it tastes, the textures, the balance of flavors, you know, the quantities. It's yeah, I live to do what I do, and I love it.
And of course, at a wedding, the food is one element of the dining experience, and you have a commitment to impeccable service. If it's not served up by well-trained servers, that that means everything can kind of go a bit askew, but you have a great team of people that you work with whenever it comes to the service side.
I really, really do. And this is kind of another interesting element of my business. I don't actually employ anybody. Everybody I have are freelance workers, but I've had the same people for the last 3 to 4 years. And some of them, they're all highly trained in their own way. They're teachers, they're doctors, they're lawyers, they're accountants. But they're the most incredible crew of humans. And if and when they leave me, their sister or their brother is coming up through the ranks, and they're all always happy to pass people on. And I feel so, so fortunate. I have over 40 people on my books, so that I'm never, you know, reliant on anybody. And it's very much, I want them to want to work with me. And I've never, it's another part of the risk, if I'm being honest, in that you don't know that you're definitely going to have people on the day. But because of my blind faith, I've never, ever been let down. And I've always had exactly enough people or extra. And it's because I provide a really lovely working environment, and I know I do. It's always good fun. I pay people really well. I make sure everyone's really well fed and well rested. And yeah, I've been very, very lucky to be able to kind of create that kind of environment where people are happy to come and work with me.
Look, it's a really amazing story, Orla. I'm really delighted to talk to you about it. Thanks so much for taking the time. And if anybody wants to find out more, where's the best place for them to go to?
Thank you so much for having me, Sharon. It's been lovely to chat. And I suppose I'm most active on Instagram, Orla McAndrew Food on Instagram. And my website is www.omcatering.ie.
Fantastic. Continued success, Orla.
Thank you.
You're listening to the best possible taste on West Limerick 102 FM.